Today is the 29th of November, and we are doing Chapter 4, Section B, Law of Causation, Yakujo's Fox. So, this is, if you were to only pick one chapter of this book to read, this is the one. This is, in a way, the most important chapter because it ties together both cause and effect, and if we want to say, Buddha nature. However, it's also one of the most difficult chapters because it's so easy for us to get caught up. And the way he, Yasutani Roshi, enters into this is by beginning with what he calls fixed karma and non-fixed karma. Fixed karma, doesn't matter how you explain it, is what cause and effect results in our life manifesting as. However, the important point is that cause and effect, as he says, are dynamic. And this effect is changing constantly according to circumstances, which is why he can say, in the next to the last paragraph of page 39, there is no concept of fate in Buddhism. In other words, despite cause and effect, there's no concept of fate in the way we use it in the Western sense. Rather, cause and effect is constantly subject to both what we do and subject to the ongoing changes that this Buddha nature allows. Because, if you want to say, cause and effect is integrated with what he calls the second cause. So, if we say it differently, no fate means that though what occurs is cause and effect, what we do with it is ours. In other words, that's exactly where practice brings us, both in terms of suffering, harming, or being at peace and joyous. What, if I'll say it differently, what demands we make of the universe, which is what cause and effect is, or more specifically, what demands we make of our body, mind, of others, whether those others are close to us, like family or partners, friends, or those distant, those that we don't even know, but they somehow are in our radar, that's what manifests our practice and our clarity and what, so to speak, adds to this mix of cause and effect and suffering, harming, or which I say it differently, it is how this universal moment of Buddha nature integrates our life with the cause and effect of the universe. And this is very important. So this is why he brings this together in talking about the cause-effect, and what he calls the second cause. And this is very important. When he says at the middle of the next page, in when cause or karma unites with an effect can be seen. And this is very important. In other words, he goes on to talk about what's the relationship between effect and one's acceptance of the effect, as he put it, or as I would put it, how one practices in the midst of the effect. And this is where he makes it clearer, if we could see what he has to say. We have, as to quote him, we have a tendency to think that an effect cannot be changed, and that it's simply the result of cause and the circumstances that, in a sense, ripen it. However, he says, and he's pointing this out, depending upon our attitude, or I would say our practice, what we make of a cause and what we make of the effect is what's most important. That's what he's talking about, is the practice realm of each moment for us and for all beings that we encounter, for our family, for friends, for those intimate, and all for those circumstances that are so-called distant, all that we encounter, our body and that of others. So that's why he makes the next statement at the end of this page, which is very important. At the end of this paragraph, therefore, he says, fatalism is a wrong conception. Nothing is fixed. See, I'll say that again. Nothing is fixed. And by that, he's saying form is exactly emptiness. Therefore, he says, law of causation is useful if one understands it. One situation is both the consequences of what cause and effect is, but also what we make of it. I talked about this last time, but I want to bring it up because it's vital to understanding where he's going and why this chapter is so important. So, at the bottom of this page, page 40.
Thank you.
At the bottom of this page, he brings up the most, Buddha nature is absolutely equal for everyone. In other words, for you, for everyone you encounter, and for everyone in the whole universe, in the sense, every being, in all the various forms of being, whether we talk about rocks or humans and everything in between and the light in the sky. Cause and effect, nevertheless, is different for everyone. But both this equality and differentiation are one. And that's the form is empty, empty is form, if I say it in a different way. And they're dependent on each other. So he can go on to say, existence of Buddha nature automatically establishes differentiation and vice versa. Therefore, and this is important for us to understand this koan that he's now going to bring to us, which in a way is considered often a very difficult koan. In some ways not at all difficult, but some ways very difficult. Therefore, no matter what the conditions, no matter how miserable or happy, and that's really already sort of jumping the gun, all are nothing but this ever-changing Buddha nature, ever-changing because of cause and effect.
What do you mean, jumping the gun there? Why do you say that?
Because miserable or happy is already our judgment about the conditions, as opposed to the conditions themselves. So, therefore, and jumping the gun because you'll see this koan, what this koan's got to say. But the point is, all are nothing but the ever-changing forms of Buddha nature, which means that your whole life is just the embrace of this Buddha nature, if I use that word, or you'll see how I talk about it on Sunday, this awakened life in all the forms of cause and effect. See? And then he's going to repeat this once more, just to drive home the point. Cause and effect cannot be nailed down. Thus, if you are unhappy about your present condition, change it. Therefore, you could produce results you desire. If you work hard and patiently, you might alter any unfavorable condition. Now, what does he mean by alter is the important word here. Alter doesn't mean that if I work hard, I'm going to be a millionaire. You might not. But alter has to do with how you consider the cause and effect conditions that you live in. How you live in the midst of the ever-changing cause and effect. Nevertheless, if you want to work for something, work for something. And that's in part which we will begin to deal with in this case. And I'll say something more about this case and then I want to stop. This is an important case. If you can see it clearly, if you can live this thoroughly, then your life will be joyous and compassionate responding. If you are clouded about it, confused and distorted, then we must practice with it. Otherwise, the confusions and entanglement result in flailing about in ways that lead to suffering and worse. Suffering for us, harming for others. So, okay, I'm going to stop here since I've said too much. And let's see what you have to say since you've all read this case and are thoroughly familiar with it. So let's stop here and see what you have to say about what I said or what you've read on these pages up to and including the end of the case.
Well, there are three different, I don't know if I want to say the word, characters in this koan.
Yes.
How do you say his name?
Yakujo or Bai Chang.
Okay, the age is there. Yakujo, the Zen teacher.
Yes.
And then there is this old person who comes.
Yes, who's the fox.
The fox, yeah. And who previously was the Zen master at this very place.
That's what he says.
Yeah, and that he said he made a mistake in his teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you've got the monks there present.
Yeah. Now, let's whether this story occurred or not, But don't skip. There's a final character, Obaku, or Wangpo. Wangpo in Chinese, Obaku in Japanese, who sort of helps us at the end to sum up the case and in a sense to sharpen our understanding of the case. So
if you go backwards, this monk reads the mind. They both read each other's mind, in the understanding of what has just happened with the burial of this fox that is buried as a monk.
Yeah. Well, I won't say read its mind, but yes, understands what.
Understand, okay.
I mean, just because it's fine as an expression, but some people would take that and say, oh, something magical's happening here. He's reading his mind. Well, fine.
It's
we could.
The same understanding.
So, yes. So you've all read this case. And what So in a way, this case is brought together in Mumon's commentary, which is at, let's see, at the end, just before his poem, where he says, if you're able to see the essential meaning of this case, you'll know that the old man's rebirth into a fox 500 times was actually a joyful life. So the first question, in a way, which is what Mumon poses, which in a way is what we've always need to get clear. What's going on here? Enlightened person is not controlled by cause and effect, or no one can escape the laws of cause and effect? What? What's going on here?
No one can escape it.
What is it you can't... Wait. What is it? Is he wrong when he says not controlled by law and cause and effect?
Yes.
Oh, wait. Look at the poem right at the end.
I'm looking at it.
The controlled or not controlled. Two sides of one coin. Not controlled and controlled. Both are 1,000 mistakes. See that, we've got to see that point, because otherwise we don't understand what it is. What does it mean, 1,000 mistakes? What's this whole case about? So, in a sense, to be controlled, and Yasutani says it there, to be controlled and to be not controlled are the same thing from an enlightened person's point of view. But, ordinarily, it seems to be different. Why are they the same, and why do they ordinarily seem to be different?
It's Buddha nature.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
That it can be controlled or not controlled.
Yeah, but we need to get more. What does it mean, controlled, and what does it mean, not controlled?
Somebody else gets a turn.
That's good.
Is it like we can't escape cause and effect? So things arise and they just arise. We can't escape it and they arise because of cause and effect. We don't. That doesn't mean that we have to be defined by cause and effect.
Okay.
Just because I get angry over something doesn't mean that that has to... Me. I don't know. That's not the right way to say it, but close to that.
Okay, so we're going in a certain direction. And in a sense, he's saying it. He says it in the very next paragraph. According to conditions, phenomena appear and disappear. That's cause and effect. According to conditions. So is that control us, or does it not control us? Or, saying it differently, if we say it controls us, what's going on there? If we say it doesn't control us, what's going on there? Is that different? Is the thinking, believing that there's something called not controlled, is that just another side of the coin, as he says, two sides of one coin? What does it mean, two sides of one coin?
It's the same thing.
Well, but what does it mean it's the same thing?
The same thing. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's different aspects of the same thing, but I don't know what that means, so don't ask me.
But that's good. So if it's different aspects of the same thing, what changes? If we can see that it's different aspects of the same thing, what changes in how we live it according to which aspect of the same thing arises?
I guess if we can't see that we're in the mix of cause and effect, then we just keep going with cause and effect. But if we can recognize it, then we can change, not change it, but we can, we don't have to go with cause and effect. We have choices. That we have choices. That's a nice way to say it.
Well, let's say it a little differently, because on the very top of page 44, in an explanatory sense, the last sentence in that chapter, I mean in that paragraph, states, our very subjugation to the law of causation bears witness to our freedom from it, and our freedom from it bears witness to our being subject to it. Or if we go to the sentence just before that, the sentence just before that states, let me see if I can, all of a sudden, my browser just froze up for a moment. Excuse me. So the point is, form is constantly changing according to conditions. Therefore, having no particular form, while we call it freedom from law of causation, at the same time, being subject to law of causation is having the particular form of the relations of the cause and effect of this moment. In other words, they're not mutually exclusive as we tend to want to think of it, not either or. I mean, that's part of form is empty and empty is form, which means form is exactly form and empty is exactly empty, even though form is exactly empty. See, they're not two sides of the same coin. It's always form is exactly empty, always. And empty is always exactly form. There's no empty one place and form somewhere else. Being subject to is exactly freedom, and freedom is exactly subject to, if we can see it clearly. That's the point that he and Yakujo's case is in, attempting to clarify for us. So, if we go to the movie, and the movie image is such a good example, or not example, metaphor, even though there's no fixed movie screenshot moment, it's not anything real, yet it seems completely real each screenshot moment, and we now have the technology. They didn't have it then when he wrote this book, but we now have the technology to get specific screenshots, even though the screenshot isn't a solid fixed thing. And yet we could, I mean, it is in the sense that on the reel of film or videotape or whatever form, there is a solid screenshot. When we see it on the screen, it seems to be a moment in this movement, but this moment is just a fiction of what we're seeing. It's both the subject to cause and effect, and it's free of cause and effect, because there's no fixed entity as whatever it is we're seeing this cause and effect. And that's the point he's making to the in the very next sentence on the second paragraph at the end of this chapter, where he says, to grasp this oneness, in other words, this oneness of being subject and having no fixed entity, with both its aspects, as a living fact, in other words, not just conceptually, but in our life and functioning and responding, is called kensho, which means essentially seeing into one's nature. In other words, a glimpse of reality, if I say it that way. Therefore, he says, be controlled, fine, not be controlled, fine, whichever one says is truth. And his point is, to go one step further, if we can see this clearly, not just see it, but live it, then we can be content, or I'll say content and joyous, no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing. But of course, none of us are this way. There's always places where we bump into our beliefs, reactions to circumstances at some point. Maybe we don't, our boundaries are much bigger, but whether it's in terms of birth and death, illness, of our own, dying of someone close to us, or dying of someone, the illness of someone close to us, or some other. See, this is birth and death and so-called emancipation. So, and then he sums it up at the last, but I'll wait before I read that last paragraph, because I've been talking and you haven't. So let's see who else has, I heard some mumblings, grumblings back there.
That was me. Could you talk a little bit about the fox?
About the fox?
Yes.
What should I say about the fox? What do you want to say about the fox?
Well, I have this crazy image that has nothing to do with this, but when you go to the pet store, they have dog toys where the stuffing's moved out of them, and they're just, you know, limp things. That's how I see this fox.
Well, in one sense, you could say this whole fox is a puppet game.
Yeah.
Maybe this happened, maybe this didn't. Now, you know, fox has... There's all sorts of connotations with the term wild fox in Oriental thinking and in Japanese and Chinese thinking. On another sense, there's a sense of a fox as a lowly character. And then, of course, in Western tradition, we have fox as a wily character and a trickster. There's all these different images of fox. Another sense you could have as being reborn as a fox as a punishment aspect. So there's all of these different images that are replayed here. And then, of course, the idea of a fox receiving a monk's burial is very suspect, since foxes aren't even human, much less monks, and monks are given a very special burial in Buddhist tradition, etc., etc., which is why this would cause consternation for someone who was attached to the rules of how and what is done in the monastery. That's another aspect here. But a fox becoming a person becoming a heavenly being, etc., etc. What's going on here? But notice that the interchange with Obaku, in a sense, pushed Yakujo. And he says, well, does that mean in your story you gave him a correct answer and therefore he was released from being a fox? And if you hadn't given him the correct answer, what would have happened? If he hadn't given the so-called wrong answer, what would have happened? Do you get, you know, is that a punishment, getting the wrong answer? Is it a reward, getting the right answer and then being released? See, that's another part of this. So that's what Mumon is also, pulling the rug out from our conceptions and ideas and judgments. Rewards, punishment, better, worse, all sorts of ideas that we bring to life and in a sense blind our life with those ideas because we then can't live in the present moment. All of us do this. It's just a question where we do it and then when we discover that we do it, what to do, how to live this awakened life, or you want to say Ku, Shunyata, Buddha nature, whichever word you like to play with, it's okay. They're all slightly different, but fine. How do we be content with the circumstances that we are? And how do we see clearly what skillful manifesting of who we are in the circumstances where you are? So, that's, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't hear.
I said, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's okay. I have some final words to say, but I want to wait till all you all. I don't even have final words. Well, I'm just going to quote him. But
I'm just going to reference the, in terms of the poem on page 3. Yeah, it's a nice little poem. Controlled or not controlled are two sides of one coin. Not controlled or controlled, both are 1,000 mistakes. I was just thinking about that coin, and you know those fly strips that people hang?
Yes.
Picnics and such? I kind of see that coin, he references there as being like that. Those strips have this, they must have a scent or something that draws flies to them.
Yes.
And when flies go to grasp whatever they smell on these strips, they get stuck. And I think that's what sometimes we might do. We get caught up in these ideas about, oh, well, you know, everything's controlled, so nothing I do matters. You know, it's all going to happen the way it's going to happen anyway, and my view on all this is pointless, etc. Or you can go on the other side of the strip and say, oh, well, you know, whatever I do, I you know, there is no consequence to whatever I do, so I can do whatever I want without consequences. And both sides of that coin are sticky. And we believe those stories and get stuck in that way.
Okay, so is that the 1,000 mistakes, or is that just two sides of one coin?
Have you ever seen the 1,000 flies stuck on that strip?
You mean those are the 1,000 mistakes?
Well, you can see it that way if you want to, yeah.
Well, what are our 1,000 mistakes? Notice what he says is controlled or not controlled are two sides of one coin. Then he says not controlled or controlled, both are 1,000 mistakes. So maybe the whole controlled or not controlled.
Yeah, that's the whole strip. No matter which side you get stuck on, the whole strip is sticky.
Well, so we'll go one step further, because I think in a sense, he sums it all up, if you can be clear about it. In his last two paragraphs, which are really just several sentences, really understanding the condition which underlies all phenomena, meaning no fixed entity. Again, this is conceptual. Being able to be content wherever we are and wherever we're doing, content or joyous. And he calls that emancipation from birth and death, or being free from birth or death, which is, if we're a fox, fine. If we're sick and elderly dying, fine. If we're young and frustrated, fine. If we're young and rich and powerful, fine. However, whatever we are is our opportunity to do what's called for, which doesn't perpetuate our suffering and our harming or that of others. But notice he makes the point. If you're a fox, fine. If you no need to become human, no need to be Buddha. This is itself being Buddha. No need to become Buddha. So this is important. Of course, most of us can, though we might be able to say this at some point, we don't really discover that we're living this in all sorts of circumstances. So, I would encourage you to look at this chapter again. I talked a little about it, but it's not so easy. But in one sense, we can distance ourselves from it because it seems not really, you know, we don't get involved with controlled or not controlled or fox, but see what you make of it in terms of your own life practice. So, I will stop here. If you have more questions, you know you're welcome to bring them up at other times or at the beginning of next week's class. Next week's class will start with existence of all Buddhas, endless time and space. Wow, that's a mouthful. However, we're not quite finished with this cause and effect, so please feel free and encouraged to reread this chapter and bring up whatever you find would be useful to clarify for your life and for our life practice. Thank you.
Hey, Genio?
Yes.
Do you want to mention the December schedule while we're here?
The December schedule, meaning what's...
I think we have three more classes.
December. So we have the 6th, the 13th, we're not sure if we have the 20th or not. We haven't decided that. So we'll decide that on the 13th. Right?
Yeah, I think the Zen Center is going to be closed that day. But
if the Zen Center is closed, then we won't have it then. But we can decide that on the 13th. We definitely will have next week, which is the 6th, and the following week, the 13th. Okay. And then we'll decide on the 20th based on the reality of the moment. Okay. Thank you all.
Thanks for your time.
Bye.